Oh, to my shame, I haven't actually been to many Friday night talks. But it says also Friday night chat here in the chat. So I have a talk, but I would actually like to make it more of a, you know, picking everybody's brain and have a discussion, spur some kind of thinking. First of all, can you hear me well?
You're not very clear.
Yeah, you're a bit sort of loud, I think. I don't know whether it's because you've got your own volume on loud or whether it's the nature of the connection.
I'm not sure. Let me see. Speakers, headsets, internal microphone. How about now?
That's better, Leon.
That's better, definitely, yeah.
Okay, good. So, anyway, I'm going to say something controversial, and please feel free to criticize, attack, to say what you think. But anyhow, I think there's a problem. We have a problem. On the one hand, democracy, and I will talk about democracy, is, well, we all like it. We think it's right. It's supported by all socialists, and it's said to be at the foundation of a new socialist society when it finally materializes. On the other hand, we see obvious problems with the way democracy is practiced today. I mean, for example, Donald Trump. Trump is just one example, but it highlights a general truth. Some quite dangerous outcomes can come about through democratic vote. So, to my mind, here we have a serious dilemma. And I say, to think about this problem, we need to look at what people understand by democracy, and also at what they really want but don't realize that they do. Just let me explain that. From the psychological point of view, even though there's still a lot we don't know, but what people really desire is twofold. One, equal access to resources, just general equality in the society. And two, control over their immediate environment. And I understand this is gross simplification, but just bear with me. There's a strong correlation between equality and subjective reports of happiness. For example, if you compare subjective reports of happiness across different countries, in countries where people generally are equal, they all say, yeah, we're happy. There's also a strong correlation between equality and subjective reports of happiness and health and being able to affect your immediate surroundings. I remember there was a study, some PhD study. Some students came to a care home and offered the elderly residents there to take care of some plants. And they just said, here, you have a plant, please take care of it, water it, it's your responsibility. If you don't do that, the plant will die. And what they noticed is that these people started living longer and having better health. So that was like great conclusion of the study. And after a couple of years, they published, they came to the care home. They said, thank you very much, it was a great pleasure. Took their plants and left. And ironically, after that, those care home residents started having worse health and started dying more. So this is just to say that a little bit of control, a little bit of responsibility over something that's around you makes people actually want to live, makes them happier, makes them healthier, stronger. And I think this is why we instinctively feel that democracy must be the right system of governance, and especially so in socialism, where we would have control over our means of production. So we feel that we need to have a say. But obviously, the current implementation of democracy, representative democracy, it fails utterly in delivering either equality or the empowering of people. And yet, it's firmly embedded in people's minds as the pinnacle of political development, the perfect system. Francis Fukuyama even wrote a famous book, The End of History, that claims that the worldwide spread of liberal democracies and free market capitalism of the West and their lifestyle just signals the end point of humanity's sociocultural evolution. And while the capitalism part is being questioned by many people, especially in light of the recent rise in inequality, But the Democracy Party has taken this unshakable truth. So we understand that there are many problems with representative democracy. In no particular order. It's flawed on several levels. I'll just list a couple of things. The system of voting we currently use is not direct. We're not asked what we want, only who will represent us most of the time. Our elected representatives very rarely correctly communicate our decisions. We ourselves have limited access to information. There's media brainwashing, low levels of education, classified information is hidden from us, and so on. Our elected representatives are biased and have very limited accountability. They will only lose what we gave them in the first place, so they're never punished, really. The process of decision-making is on purpose falsely presented as depending on ideology instead of evidence and best available science. And we are misled to think about joining this or that political party and follow their current ideological narratives and be in conflict with other people who are just as mistakenly choosing to join a different party. Okay, I'm not talking about socialist party here. And I'm sure you can think of many other problems. And for an extensive review of all problems, please read the book of our comrade Keith, who is here, and the channel aptly titled The Battle of Democracy. So, what can we do? If socialism suddenly comes tomorrow, I think we will be ill-prepared. I'm not talking about describing in detail what a socialist society should look like. It's been pointed out many times before that this is up to the people to decide. And rightly so. What I'm saying is that we might want to already start thinking on how to make that decision-making process work, how to make sure that people are well-equipped and supported in organizing their decision-making and making it efficient, which is not simple. There's quite some literature on democratic decision-making and governance, and I haven't read it all, but I would argue that there is still no consensus on the best way to do it, and very little understanding of the whole process by the general population. I have already put forward my idea on how to improve one aspect of democratic process at the summer school talk about digital technologies, so some of you may have heard it. What I said there was, politicians never really ask us what it is that we want. Because on the high general level, we all want pretty much the same thing. And it's understood as given that we just want to be happy. We want to live happy, healthy, prosperous lives. But they always ask us how we want them to give it to us. And by this, I mean which party should give us happiness or which specific politician within a party or whether we want our representative to adhere to a specific political leaning or have specific position on immigration, what have you. And they ask us this as if it was not their job to make that decision, to choose the best available how. Because they are the ones with access to the best scientific advice and technology, not us. I personally don't really care whether the government is Tory, Labour, or anarchist for that matter, in their dealings with my happiness. I know that to be happy, I, and a lot of people, according to psychological studies at least, need equal access to resources and control over means of production. Now, the how of this must be addressed by some professionals who know stuff about it, and they should use the best available scientific evidence and tools. So here we're getting to the crux of the matter. Just bear with me. We as a society will need to assume a much more humble approach to the expression of our opinions on things we know next to nothing about. We definitely know what we want in our immediate surroundings better than anyone else, no question about that. But we will need to give up the desire to have a say on the how of things outside of that small area and leave it to science to figure out the best way. And when we are finished doing that, we will realize that what is left and what really must be governed democratically is actually not that much and mainly concerns our immediate surroundings. Like, I don't know, whether we want to have this or that painting on the wall in the center of a town. We should not be able to vote for politicians who, for example, withdraw countries from Paris Agreement or decide to sell guns to Saudi Arabia. If all these questions were left to scientists, there would be no guns or money to buy them. Let me just reiterate this point. Most of the decisions in political decision-making are actually the question of how. They're technical questions, and so they should not be subject to democratic process. Some people may object that the purely technical approach is often not nuanced enough because there's politics involved, interests of people. And I think this is a valid point, but that such situations can and should be successfully tackled by teams of scientists from different backgrounds, including political and economic studies, or by specialists trained in humanities. Democratic decision-making then has only limited usefulness and should be used to organize local applications of the scientifically chosen best practices. And in my opinion, such a combination should work well in a socialist society. But of course, what do I know? So I invite people to throw their opinions.
Right. Okay. Right. If people are not on the appropriate page, as I'm not, they should be on the speaking queue page. Right. Okay. Right. That was a little bit abrupt. So we haven't got anyone there at the moment. But Paddy, you're there. Go on. Do.
Well, speak. I just thought. I just thought I'd throw in the a kind of obvious question before anyone else does, which is if you've got a... I'm not quite sure what you're proposing, Leon, whether you were talking about decision-making in socialism or decision-making now, I wasn't quite clear, but leaving that aside... this is kind of obvious question, isn't there, of who guards the guardians? You know, if you've got scientists making the decisions over technical things, how do you know that they are making those decisions for technically justifiable reasons? And how, basically, how do you know that they haven't been got at?
Excellent question. So just to answer your first bit, in socialism. So right now it's incorrigible. There's nothing we can do about it. So I'm thinking about the next better system. And then how to make sure, if you look at the system of science at the moment, right now as it is, it's already quite good and it's better than any other system I know. It works brilliantly. The only places where it falls short is where money's involved. So when you have grants, people want to apply for funding, they want to... so sometimes there's a lot of that. When, again, people want to get more money, then they cheat. If you take the money out of the equation, then everything else in the scientific system starts working much stronger, which is peer review. And that system works really amazingly well. So you get checked by a lot of other scientists, and unless everybody says, or at least the vast majority says, that yes, you are saying something that they have also seen, that they have checked, they have confirmed as working, then they say that what I'm saying must be true. And so it's published, it's peer-reviewed, it's checked and rechecked, and then that system itself grows and grows and grows and becomes better and better. And so, like I said, it's already working quite remarkably well. And I'd say if you take money out of the equation, it will work even better. However, of course, I do realize that there are problem spots because now it works very well in areas where you can experiment. So you can prove something wrong using an experiment. If we introduce social sciences, it's a lot harder to do. So in higher level decisions where you have to combine social sciences, maths, everything, then yes, it has to be several people at already high level of decision-making in science working together. And then it's just a matter of trust that in a system where there's no money, they will not want to make a mistake or they will make the best decision anyway. And there's nobody who can make a better one.
Okay, Thanks, Leon. We've got a number of people in the speaking queue now. First, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's given us a few things to talk about. My question, which I think you sort of maybe sort of started to cover in your last couple of sentences, was in the kind of system you're suggesting, how would you define a scientist? And you know, you mentioned there about social sciences being a slightly different discipline to the, you know, the more sort of physical sciences. And you also mentioned about those sort of working on the sort of the higher end of science. But and I suppose that could be you could then sort of define a scientist as someone who's working, I don't know, in a laboratory with a good reputation, or a university. But again, I was wondering how sort of broad your definition of scientist would be. I mean, you could have someone who, you know, knows the ins and outs but doesn't work for, you know, the right institution, if you like. Or someone who might not want to work for the a scientific institution, which would then confer them the ability to make decisions. I just wouldn't mind hearing a bit more about how you would define a scientist, and sort of how broad that definition would be. Thank you.
Yes, scientist for me is quite a broad notion, because I would say that anybody who's done a doctorate where they had to be counting something would be a scientist, simply because that experience of struggling with the objective reality and realizing that your assumptions are 95% of the times wrong for several years just does something to people. It brings sort of humility that other people don't have. The people who say, oh, this theory is right or wrong, conspiracy theories I'm talking about. So, yeah, very, very broad definition. And then if we want to tackle a specific problem, then obviously these people may not have the expertise to do it. So they will contact those scientists who are working in that field more, so scientists who continue their science work, and then ask those people to contribute, because you don't actually need that many people to contribute unless it's a universal problem like the climate change. I hope that makes sense, or if I need to clarify that.
No, thank you. Yeah, cheers.
Okay, thanks, Leon. It's Nick next.
Oh, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Right. Thanks for the talk, Leon. Very interesting. I've had a few questions, really. It seems that you're sort of portraying quite an elitist kind of rule here. I mean, if you look at aspects like morals, ethical decisions and views, I mean, what would make a scientist or someone who studied the physical sciences or the social sciences, whatever, you know, more suitable or any better than the next person for those kind of decisions? The other thing is that a lot of scientific decisions have a lot of political and social repercussions to them. So, you know, again, you can argue that the scientists, are they really experts in this? Why would they know more than the next person? You know, and how do you separate, you know, scientific reasoning from these other social, ethical, and moral decisions? So there's a few questions there.
Thanks, Nick. So this is something that I spoke about very briefly at the very end, and it's definitely a question to think about, so it's not clear-cut at all. I will try to answer maybe some part of it. As first of all, I would ask a question then, why not? So the notion that ethics is somehow outside the field of human knowledge, I think, ultimately comes from religion. Religious people think that this is God. This comes from heaven. We are somehow given the ethics, or it's all in the Bible and so on. But then there's been some brilliant British philosophers who analyzed ethics, wrote books about it, and it is part of modern science of psychology, ethics, actually. And so I believe that these people who are studying it, they do know more about it than probably you or me, because I've personally never, well, I have studied it a little bit, but I'm not at all a scientist from that point of view. So, but I do think that those people know it better. Why not? That's my question. Why not treat ethics as a science, one of the sciences? It is, in fact, possible to measure, if even just by subjective reports, people's levels of satisfaction and happiness. If you're talking about ethics from the point of view of what's right or wrong, again, there's some works that are known, have been known for the last 200-300 years. Basically just, you can treat it as a sum of human happiness and satisfaction. So that's one way to deal with it. And the same is about politics or social issues. Again, you take the sum of people's satisfaction and you try to see which changes in the society bring the better results and treat it scientifically. I haven't seen any avenue of human activity that would be outside a scientific approach. And in fact, the only times when I have seen that people were against it, those were people who are not familiar with science.
Thanks, Leon. It's Darren next.
Hi, Leon. Interesting talk. I don't come from a scientific background, so apologies for my, you know, like layperson response to your talk. I guess one question that arises out of what you're suggesting, and you kind of briefly mentioned Keith Graham's Battle of Democracy. I see the socialist project, if you like, as the battle of democracy. It's about the working class acting in its own self-interest to achieve socialist consciousness, for a majoritarian revolution to establish, a classless society, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just trying to get my head around this idea that we're talking about a participatory revolution, the self-emancipation of the working class. And then, if you want to say we get to that point, we then are seemingly going to suddenly decide, if you like, abdicate that responsibility to scientists, to a group of people over there who are seemingly, once the cash nexus or whatever has been removed from the equation, will seemingly act in a fashion, which would, be in the interest of the majority of society. I'm not saying that wouldn't be the case. I generally don't know, but my point is that we're part of it. Our argument is that the working class has a confidence in itself for political, social, and economic democracy. And then once we get to that point, we're almost like giving part of that democracy away. That's what, at this point, I can't get my head around what you're suggesting. It's almost like, it kind of reminds me, I apologize if this is stretching it too far, but if you look at the early Bolsheviks, after the Russian Revolution, it was the engineers, I think studies have been made that the engineers, like, made up a great proportion of you know, professional revolutionaries, not just in the Soviet Union. You look at Britain, a lot of the early communists were engineers. And it was almost like, you know, this idea of the benevolent, enlightened expert acting on behalf of the rest of us. And I think that taking that view, you kind of, I personally think we lose sight of basically what socialism is about. I understand we can't decide on everything. I wouldn't assume they have like an equal voice on issues that I don't fully understand. But at the same time, I think mechanisms should be in place for the greatest voice, you know, the greatest participation in general running of society. That's just some initial thoughts. But it was a really interesting talk, and thank you.
Thank you. These are some really, really good questions to think about, because it's about everyone, about how everybody feels themselves, their position within the society, their struggle, and what brings people together. Also, I absolutely agree with the idea that nobody wants to have a kind of group of enlightened people there somewhere deciding everything for them. And I wouldn't have that myself. It's very difficult to talk about a society of the future from the point of view of what we have now. And also, as you mentioned, kind of in transition also, how it can be done. I know about the Bolsheviks example and the engineers. It actually, the way I see those engineers is they are halfway towards the scientific, let's say, status or mindset. But anyhow, just to start tackling this a little bit, the way I see it, at least, is, first of all, the society is changing. So let's take Britain, for example. The kind of jobs we have now are moving steadily from manufacture towards services. At the same time, the level of education is still increasing. More and more people attend universities. I think this trend is going to continue. So there's going to be more and more people going to universities and being just generally closer to scientists. So they will not already think of scientists, quote, as somebody who is sitting in the ivory tower. I personally had to have this problem that I was one of the PhD students who is among the increasingly huge number of people who finish their studies and then they have nothing to do. There's no jobs for us. Nobody really needs this kind of expertise, and this is only going to grow. So this is the kind of, if you know what I'm getting at here, is this is the general trend. This is where we are going. There are going to be more and more people like this, better informed, better educated, closer to science. So that's just one way how it's going to be. The second thing I wanted to mention is also, it was part of my talk during the summer school on technologies, digital technologies, which in the beginning of 20th century, it just was not possible. But now, using digital technologies, there could be a lot more transparency. So again, it's not people in the ivory tower sitting somewhere and deciding things for us. It's there, for example, online, where we can come and see in real time how this decision-making is taking place. And we can make it subject to scrutiny, again, in real time, by linking it to some other people with their opinions. So using digital technologies, it can be brought a lot closer to people. And if more people feel closer and that they can engage with this decision-making, the better is going to be the end result, in my opinion. But I completely agree with you that this is a difficult problem, and yeah, it warrants a lot more discussion than this. So thank you for this.
Thanks, Leon. Right, we've got a good number of people in the queue now, and it's Brian next.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, interesting subject that's been near to my heart and thinking for a long, long time. Just briefly, what I'm bringing up touches on the concerns that was breached by Darren in regards to the decision-making process, right? The first dictum that we've got to remember in regards to the decision-making process and the scientific community is that the scientists advise and society decides, right? Now, unless the scientists can get the support of society on its side, none of its theories are going to be of any practical benefit, right? It's got to gain the support. So it's got to put its theories through the decision-making process in order to gain the support. Now, the first thing it's got to do is get whatever theory it comes up with and it thinks it's got a practical application, is get it on the agenda. So that means an appeal to the general society. Now, where that goes, you know, if it gets accepted through the decision-making process, right, it then taken up to the next level, which is, you know, from the community level up to the regional level, and then from the regional level up to the continental level, and then up to the world level, if so necessary. You know, there'll be some scientific theories, right, that don't need to go any further other than the community level, because they're only practical on at a community level. And so it goes on. Right. My concern is, right, that it'd be so many scientific theories, right, that society will be overwhelmed, and they'll have to be another decision-making process in order to whittle them down. Otherwise, they're not going to be heard. The ones that is going to be of most practical benefit, etc. Right. How they whittle them down, I got no idea at all. But it's pretty obvious, you know, that society, whether or not it will support the scientific theories as a practical measure. Right, without the support from society, none of these scientific theories are going to go forward whatsoever.
There's a key point there, Leon, I think, in what Brian has to say. Do you want to say something about it?
Yeah, just to mention briefly that I do this as my job, actually, just talking to scientists and offering their advice to policymakers. And so basically, I see that, like, first part of your question, the problem that you mentioned, is not really a problem, because that's this plethora of scientific theories, it doesn't really exist. These smaller, non-important theories just get shut down very quickly from within the scientific community. So it's just not a problem at all. And those really important scientific theories, when they come to that level of policymaking, what I see happens now is politicians come and say, sorry, we don't have the money for that, or we have our own interests. So there's very clear on this, from the scientists, there's a lot of ethical considerations there that I see. And then from the politicians, they come and say, yeah, we need this, no, don't need that, sorry. So to me, this is such a clear line that we just need to get rid of. I hope that answers a little bit your question.
Well, it does. It does and it doesn't, Leon. Right. You know, because what my question was aimed at was the decision-making process within a socialist society, right? Nothing to do with money whatsoever, right? But of course, the scientific theories will still be restricted by the amount of support that's given by society as a whole, especially a material support, not just in physical support, etc., but the material support. Now, scientists can't carry out their experiments and their peer-to-peer reviews, etc., without this material support. And in order to get this material support, they've got to approach society and go down through the decision-making process.
Yeah, this is a completely valid concern. So just try to think of it from not from the point of view of we're not going to let you, but from the point of view of what can you, the scientists, give us? So rather than saying, okay, that those crazy scientists that want to do this and this and that and everything and want to get all the resources, think of it more from the social, what's it called, social order, kind of. So the society comes up with, what do we want as a society? We want to have better houses, I don't know, faster cars, what have you, better health care, and so on. So this is the order that the society places. We want this. And then it asks the scientists, can you give it to us? For us, these are the priorities. This is what we want. This is what my talk was about. From the society, we ask, what do you want? Not how to give it, but what. And then if you say that this is what you want, then why would you want to limit the resources that you're giving? You want it.
Okay, interesting discussion. Shall we move on to Keith then? Keith, you're next.
Okay, thanks. Well, thanks, Leon. Really interesting, challenging stuff. And I'll be very, very brief. I think really I'm following up some of the things that Darren was saying. I suppose underlying your view, there's got to be some kind of assumption of the order that we're not very good at making decisions, we people in general, and some other smaller group of people are better. Well, I mean, let's perhaps leave aside the question whether that's correct. I think you don't establish it by showing that we, the people in general, sometimes make bad decisions, because then you'd have to point to any decision-making system which never had that result, and I don't think you'd find it. But there's a question which is kind of obvious to raise at this point, and that's the question, well, given how good or bad we are at making decisions, could we get better? Could we improve it? And if so, how could that come about? That's an obvious question to raise, and in a way I think I'd want to suggest the obvious answer to it, that an arena in which people can get better at making decisions is in the movement itself for a social change. And I think let's not be too modest about the party's own role in this. Anyone who joins the party is immediately on an equal footing with anyone else in the party, and there are structures there for decision making, there are structures for bad decisions to be reviewed. And, you know, we ought perhaps to emphasise more frequently than we do how very, very different that is from any other political party. I mean, I haven't even mentioned the fact that we don't have leaders. But what is done in the name of the party by any subset of members, such as the EC, is under the control of the party itself. And that gives an arena in which people can learn to make better decisions. Okay, I'll stop there. Thanks.
That's a very interesting way to look at it, Keith. Thank you. So one thing that I wanted to point out is that I would really like to stress that I am not trying to divide the society into groups of people. I'm strictly against divisions. I don't want to say that these are people who are better at decision-making and those are people who are worse. What ideally I would like to see is some kind of system, maybe with using digital technologies, maybe not, I'm not sure, where people wouldn't have to make decisions, because we, as biological machines, we have biases. This is inside our biology. Yes, we can try to learn to get better at it, but we will never be perfect at it simply by the nature of who we are. We are biological systems. We are biased. So the best decisions are taken when we include mathematics, computers, all these non-human things. This is how, I don't know, you count, for example, jabs for COVID. How much benefit to the society this or that decision be. When the doctors are doing it, they are counting things. They're not thinking with their heart, even though we think just intuitively that, oh my God, this is the right thing to do. But in fact, if you really want the society to benefit, you have to count. So I would ideally like to exclude all of us from decision-making. And at the same time, include all of us in creating the system that will help us make better or perfect decisions. So thinking specifically about people in the party is very interesting because, well, we don't really have to make a lot of decisions here. And those decisions that we do make, they're mainly about our immediate surroundings, which should be taken democratically. And this is what we do. So this is one of my concerns, that if, when it gets bigger to a bigger level, then we'll get in trouble because it is working well now. But once there are more people, it might not. And what are we going to do then? But again, I have more questions than answers, I guess. So definitely worth thinking about it.
Thanks, Leon. Freddie now.
Yeah, thank you. Leon, you know, forgive me and other comrades if necessary. I'm not entirely sure what it is you're advocating. Because at the outset of your address, you were talking about democracy and people's happiness, etc., and I was following it. So I have to say, you know, perhaps even through my own ignorance, I stopped following what it was you were actually advocating. Now, for me, when you're talking about happiness, for example, we know that studies are held elsewhere and some countries come out as happier than others, etc. I mean, I would say that personally, I mean, I'm sort of reasonably happy in most ways. But what I get distinctly unhappy about is the crime and the war and the poverty and the lack of housing, etc. That people throughout the world don't enjoy to the extent that some others do. So, you know, what I'm really trying to understand, what is it you're actually advocating? I mean, I can't go along with this. This idea, this, as the Socialist Party for me analysed capitalism well, and I'm not a great one for trying to quote Karl Marx, etc., because substantially what the party's proved itself to be more than able, the Socialist Party has been proved itself more than able to carry on from the analysis of capitalism. What I'm trying to look at here is though, what is it you're advocating? I don't see where the decision-making becomes a problem because, and that people make the decisions, the people as a whole, not a group of scientists somewhere, then start to make the decisions. As socialist understanding develops throughout the world, then surely how these decisions, etc., are made will be developed also. And when you talk about the digital technology, yes, I can see that being used on a worldwide basis in terms of communications, etc., as to what's happening. But I don't see where we would be relying on just perhaps some scientists somewhere to determine what it is we're doing. Society as a whole will determine that. So forgive me if I can't understand you properly, and if you can elaborate upon what it is you're actually advocating, it would certainly be of a help to me. Thank you.
Yes, I can. I will try to keep it short, not really elaborate, but rather simplify maybe a little bit. So what I'm saying is, in the past, there were very few decision makers, kings, rulers, who say, I said so, and it will be so. Then later people said, no, wait, we all want to decide, the people. And so they introduced democracy, or representative democracy, or whatever. But it's not working now. Why? Because, yeah, they do say, we all decide. But in fact, we're not. They're just manipulating people's minds, people's ideas. They're just telling them, I don't know, there's been falsified election results. So they go and they storm the White House. It's manipulation. So in fact, it's not the people who are ruling. And what I'm saying is, I think I'm just worried that this kind of manipulation, just saying, those people want it, because actually I want it, that this is going to continue. So what I'm proposing is that the baseline, that common denominator for making decisions is not this society, there's some society somewhere, which is actually not any more concrete than some scientists that you're mentioning. It's also some society as a whole, but scientific truth, evidence, something that we can prove, something that is a common denominator in the sciences right now. So we eliminate people from the equation so they cannot be manipulated. And once we have digital technology to check that this is in fact true, then we have better decision making. This is what I'm saying. To eliminate manipulation, lies from the equation, base all decision making on sound facts and logic.
Can I come back in that, please, Howard?
Yeah, okay, Freddie, sure, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for that. Listen, when you say people are manipulated, we know what the capitalist system does to us. It gets to try and think us down a particular route. When successive governments or whatever are issuing their manifestos, that's a manipulation as well. They're promising us the earth, you know. And yes, it very, very rarely happens. So people become less and less interested at times in politics. But I still don't get this idea of taking people, human beings, out of it sounds to me as if they're going to be coming out of the equation. And if I've got that wrong, then forgive me. But as socialist understanding becomes more aware nationally, internet, globally, the amount of manipulation might even try to be more intense. But workers will become far more aware of what's happening and will not get conned by that. So this is where, in all honesty, I'm having some difficulty with what is being suggested. And if I'm misunderstanding you, forgive me. Thanks.
No, I'm afraid that this is this could be a common misunderstanding, and it could be a weakness in probably how I present the idea. So I'm not trying to take humans out of the equation. I'm trying to take human weakness, the possibility of human manipulation out of the equation. But in the end, I actually want more people, or ideally everybody, to be involved in this kind of decision making, but in collective building of the system that will help us make decisions together, really together. Sorry, I'm not sure if it's making any better my explanation.